Well, good morning, church. John asked me how I got here this morning. I said, not a problem. Agnes told me exactly where to go. And he said, who's Agnes? Well, that's that little lady on the GPS. And I got this revelation between the Holy Spirit and the Bible. That's Agnes and the GPS. So listen to the Holy Spirit. Read your Bible daily. You'll arrive at the destination. Before I start, I just want to share with you who I am, how did I get here, and what do I hope to accomplish today. So who am I? I define success as follows. Discover your passion, commit to be the best you can be at it, and share it with others. And somebody asked me yesterday, actually, I had, let me just go back a minute here. Who am I? I'm married to a beautiful woman, Laurel Ann Hobbs. We are going to celebrate our 30th wedding anniversary this October. Let me rephrase that. I'm going to celebrate our 30th. Laurel thinks it's around her 15th. She said, Bob, you're always so optimistic. We have been blessed with four young children. Well, they're not so young anymore. Four children. Michael, our eldest, just graduated from University of Western Ontario Medical School. He's going to be doing 5 years general surgery in the London community. I hope I never see him in that community. Professionally, I mean. Ted is our second son. He's 24. Michael's 26. Ted is 24. Ted went to the University of Waterloo. Can everybody hear me?
You're okay.
Yeah. Went to the University of Waterloo, whereas he said, Dad, I didn't drop out. I'm taking a leave of absence. In his last year, he came up with the idea of developing a new business, which sort of took a turn to the right, and we're all probably far too old, except some of the younger kids, and they're gone, called text messaging. It's a cross-platform text messaging service. It's called Kick Messenger, and he's very, very excited by it. And another time, I'll tell you more about it. Blair, our third son, is just finishing at the University of Wilfrid Laurier University in Windsor, in Waterloo also. And he just has to get to the end of August, get his degree, and then he's marching off to New York, where he will start with RBC in the institutional equity area. And Jack is our fourth son, and Jack unfortunately had a stroke in the pregnancy. So life is not always a straight line for you. But I will say this, having a Jack who requires 24/7 care, who has to be carried everywhere we go with him, opens up an area of your heart that normally would not be opened up. And so I'm not going to say Jack has been an easy journey, but there have been blessings to it too. I was out with Jack actually yesterday picking strawberries, which is hilarious because when I got home, Laura looked at the wheelchair. She said, Bob, there's strawberry stains all over the wheels because you go up and down the aisle. And, you know, we only bought or picked for 15 minutes, but he loved getting out with his dad. And I'm very committed to sort of sharing my faith through what I call the side door Christianity as opposed to the front door. And the side door, there's a lot of good people out there, John Maxwell being one, Jim Rohn being another, and there's nothing wrong with coming through the side door. There's nothing wrong with coming through the front door. Just know which door you do best. And I do the side door better than the front. I don't think that's an ungodly belief. At least I hope it's not. John, you can pray for me later. Anyways, I was there, and this woman, she's 18 years old, and I said, oh, you know, what do you do? And she said, well, I just finished grade 12. And I've written 19 different papers, and at the end I'll show you where you can go find them. They're free. They're on family. They're on personal development. They're on wealth management, and they're on philanthropy. There's 19 PDFs. They're free. My website is called dreamscostnothing.com. I've got business cards in my pocket. You can see the presentation at the end. I would encourage you just to go and see what size fits you. If you're a grandparent, go look at The Incredible Journey. It talks about being a grandparent. If you have young children, A Tale of Two Cities, obviously Charles Dickens wrote it, made it a lot more famous than I'll ever make it, but I took the paper, the idea, talked about a city called responsibility and a city called entitlement. The basics of wealth management, the paper I'll be doing today, is available on the website along with around 6 other wealth management papers. So that's really who I am. In terms of my professional job, sort of the thing that makes this all possible, I suppose, from a financial point of view, I've been in the wealth management industry for almost 40 years, not stretching the band a bit, taking a little poetic license. I was on the brokerage side, but, you know, I can live with that. 40 years. I've been very, very fortunate to find something I truly enjoy doing. I currently am at a firm called McLean Budden in Toronto. We manage around $35 billion worth of assets for various organizations. And I'm involved in the private client area, which means I have private clients anywhere from $1 million up to excess of $1 million, well in excess of $1 million. And my job is, it's a very simple business. I think it's performance fees and service with a wraparound of trust. My job is to help families manage their money, not only the performance they get, but the issues that are behind the performance. Because, you know, lest we all forget, you can't take the money with you, right? There's only two things you can do at the end. Well, you can do three. You can poor planning, and the government gets it. You leave it to your family, or you leave it to the community you live in. I mean, that's all you can do with it. You can't put it in a suitcase and sort of put it in the casket and take it with you. It just, believe me, it doesn't work that way. So, how did I get here? Sort of two different avenues. The first one was, as I said, I'm involved in the wealth management industry, and I'm always looking for creative ways to expand my horizon, expand my contacts. And so I wrote a paper around 5 years ago. Oh, actually, I rephrase that. I used PowerPoint to write a paper, which is deadly. If you ever do presentations, don't do it. Trying to make a Word document into PowerPoint is a killer. There will not be 60 slides today. There will be 8. So for anybody that's nervous on my presentation. I took the topic of what managing your wealth to fulfill your dreams. And it came about very simply, without getting into the whole story, is a friend of my wife's received a large inheritance, and 15 years later, that $1.5 million was gone. And she was sort of our age. And so the question is, like, what happened there? I mean, what a tragedy. And so I looked at that and came up with the idea that, and I'm not trying to be chauvinistic here, but women, please forgive me, but there are women, look, men can do it, they just do it with bigger numbers, but there are women who will let their husbands take care of the finances, and of course I'm speaking traditional, my father's generation, and that sort of filtered to our generation. So there are single women, there are widows. To make a long story short, I designed a paper called Managing Your Wealth to Fulfill Your Dreams for the women, female audience. Very correctly, though, sent it off to two women to sort of get their thoughts, immediately came back and said, oh, Bob, this isn't going to cut it. I mean, are you nuts? You're telling the women to do this, this, and this. This is written by a guy. Every woman in there is going to see it in 2 seconds. So I revamped it, redid it, and wrote a paper called Managing Your Wealth to Fulfill Your Dreams. At the same time, my third son, Blair, the one who was at Wilfrid Laurier, asked would I speak at their annual business conference called Accelerate. That was in 2007. And, of course, my immediate reaction was, no, I don't think so. Why would I want to possibly do that, give up a Saturday and have to go trooping down and talk about it? You know, I mean, I could do it, I suppose. And then I got thinking about it. I said, oh, Bob, get off your duff and, you know, go down and talk to the organizer at least and tell her what you think you can do. And if it fits with that, what they want, then go ahead and do it. Well, I went in again. I took the PowerPoint, made it a Word document. Those poor people that year that saw my first presentation. Anyways, those two avenues coming together, I then spoke. The next major event in this was I spoke in Winnipeg at a conference, a breakfast really, not a conference, for young business associates in the Winnipeg community. And it dawned on me after the presentation, if you're going to do this seriously, you've got to write it out. Enough of this trying to do PowerPoint. Chunk the PowerPoint, write out a paper. Now, I just had this impression I couldn't possibly write a paper. And some people would say, well, that impression's pretty good. But anyways, what I have done, I've taken the Abraham Lincoln. The thing that I always believe in is Abraham Lincoln said, when I'm going to talk to somebody, I take 2/3 of my time before the meeting to think what he wants to talk about, and 1/3 of the time what I want to talk about. So what do I hope to accomplish today? This paper is written for you. This presentation is for you. I know wealth management, at least I think I do. I've done well by it. My family's okay with it. Let me ask if, without embarrassing anybody, when it comes to basics of wealth management, who feels comfortable that they've got a handle on it? They really, this is all sort of an extra topic. Not a hand. So let me start with this. I look at it and say, it's all so simple. Like, what am I missing? And I don't mean this to criticize you, by the way. But I look at it and say, well, establish your dreams, define your goals, create the plans to carry them out, practice discipline, and nurture it with patience. I mean, what is so complicated here? Dreams, goals, plans, discipline, passion, patience, etc. And so, like anything in life, you have to stand back and reflect. And I reflected upon this and came to a very quick observation that my father, especially my father, my parents, but especially my father, taught me well. They taught me the basics of wealth management from when I was around 3 years old. So my experience in the wealth management industry is actually 55 years. I lie, 56. That 59th birthday is always hard because you're getting closer to 60. My parents taught me, my father taught me extremely well. They were good role models and they were good teachers. You have to do both. It's not enough just to be a good role model. You have to be a good teacher. So that was my first observation. Well, my second observation is there are many people out there that had parents that were either not good role models, not good teachers, or heaven forbid, were neither. So how could they possibly learn? And so I don't say this to judge those people, but to merely explain that there is a reason why this hasn't happened. So from those two observations, I came to the following conclusion. We have to make this really simple to start with. You know, John Maxwell, the speaker, who have ever been exposed to him, people come up to him and say, John, how do you write a book? Well, John says, you start with one word, followed by another, and put a third one in. No, 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 John, how do you write a book? You start with one word, you know, like the third time by saying, listen, are you not listening to me? I think it's the same with wealth management. What happens is we make it far too complicated and people just get turned off. And so when they get turned off, they don't establish their dreams. If they create their plans, they're too complicated. They want it now. They don't want to do the work. And then they finally just give up. They just give up and say, you know what, somebody else will do it. Obviously, you know, wealth management. The reality is everybody has wealth to manage. And if you don't break the generational curse, then your children are going to have the same problem that you've got. So what I'm trying to do today is really make it quite simple. So let's start off with the presentation.
Sure, there you are. Hurry, your dad's going to get your picture.
You didn't expect this, did you?
Look, where you go. There you go.
That's Ted.
There.
He's now 24. He was 3 years old at the time.
Are you going to sleep out here, Teddy?
Not for now.
Not for now.
Ooh. I can do it.
Oh, you can do it yourself. Can you?
Do you see what he said? I can do it. So I encourage you in the next half hour to don't lose sight that you can do it. I hope to make this as simple, giving you two ideas at the end. Whether you accept those ideas, whether you implement those ideas, the tragedy would be a month from now, you don't ask yourself, if you haven't done it, why not? The outline of my talk today, we're going to talk about common mistakes because, and again, I've made some of these mistakes too, but not as many as perhaps people that don't have the basics of wealth management. We'll talk about taking control of your personal situation, the generational transfer of wealth, which is so important, some ideas in getting started, and then I'll conclude with a cafe latte. By the way, I have notes on all this presentation I can give out later. I think the common mistakes. My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge, Hosea 4, verse 6. I think the first common mistake, it could either be called a lack of confidence or a lack of knowledge, because, I mean, it's 6 of 1 half, which comes first, the chicken or the egg? I mean, if you're not knowledgeable of something, it's pretty tough to be confident about it. And I think the reason why there's a lack of knowledge and a lack of confidence is this. Back to that story I told you about the inheritance. The two observations I made from that story is most people, when it comes to the term wealth management, and by the way, wealth management is more than just money. Let me say this. Wealth management is taking your money to teach your values to your children. Taking your money to teach your values to your children. That's the most important thing about wealth management. When you leave the next generation just money, you help them fulfill a need. When you leave the next generation your values, you help them establish their dreams. It takes little time and effort to leave your money. It takes little money, but a lot of time and effort to leave your values. It takes little time and effort to leave your money. It takes little money, but a lot of time and effort to leave your values. That'll be the central theme you'll see through my presentation. And so getting your own house in order first, so then you can teach this, is extremely important. The two observations I made is most people outside our industry find the topic of wealth management either extremely boring, very intimidating, or both. Boring, intimidating, or both. We as an industry have made the topic of wealth management either extremely boring, very intimidating, or both. This is not a good solution. We fed into the problem that the group has. So I think it's important to get over these biases. I'm not sure I can make it exciting, but hopefully not too boring. And don't be intimidated by it. Do not be intimidated by it. I believe it's in the Bible. Jesus' second most important topic is money that he talks about. So obviously, now unfortunately, Jesus didn't leave with us, you know, like open a tax-free savings account. So we have to sort of take some of this and do it ourselves. But life changes, society changes, opportunities change. So it's very, very important. I think the second most common mistake is a lack of discipline. You know what? Everybody wants the goodies, but few are prepared to do the work. The only place success comes ahead of work is in the dictionary. My father got it at age 3, got it on his deathbed at age 40, 84. The only place success comes ahead of work is in the dictionary. It requires discipline to do this. I'm going to share with you two ideas. It's up to you. You have to do it yourself. I can only give you the tools. I can give you some ideas. I can give you the knowledge. But at the end of the day, you have to take the discipline and do it yourself. So I think of lack of discipline. I think the third most common mistake, and they're not in any particular order, is a lack of vision. A lack of vision. You know, I think it's so important. You know, Michael, our eldest son, just with his wife, bought a house in London. And we wanted to help them financially with some money. But before I did anything, I sat down with Laurel and said, okay, is this a gift or is it a loan? Oh, whatever you think. Oh, no, no, Laurel. We're going to structure a document that we will then present to Michael and Brianna so that we have a clear understanding what our dream is, obviously, to help them establish their own life. Our goal is to provide some money, but what is the plan? You can't just slide this by, because what happens is 3 years later, all of a sudden, everybody's scrambling around. Well, you gave them the money, and what were the terms, and this and that? No, 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 no. So what we did is we said it's a 5-year loan. It's a loan, not a gift, first of all. It's got some gift features, though, because the interest rate in the first 2 years is zero. Well, that's not bad. Even with low interest rates, zero is zero. 2, 3, and 4. 2% the third year, 3% the fourth year, 5% the fifth year. And then we will renew the interest rates at the end of 5 years. We didn't tell them what rate. We'll just see how it's all going at that point. We also told them in the first 10 years, whatever they pay off, and they're required to start paying off in the sixth year, whatever they pay off, we will match with a forgivable loan. So if they pay off $1,000, say, in year 3, the mortgage or the loan, it's not a mortgage, the loan will go down by $2,000. Their $1,000 plus our $1,000 gift. Now, you see what we're doing here? We're giving them some free will. They have the option. You think they're going to take the option, but you don't know. It's up to them. So there's lots of sort of soft incentives, the interest rate and the forgiveness of the loans, to make it a gift and a loan. But that requires structure, requires thinking, it requires communication. And on Monday, I am going down to have dinner with Michael and Brianna, and they are signing the agreement. Two copies. We keep a copy, they keep a copy. Now, you might think this is being legalistic. This thing's not enforceable. It's not intended to be enforceable. But it is intended to give accountability. Okay, discipline. Very, very important. Discipline by both the giver and the receiver, by the way. Too often, the giver just has no discipline, and guess what? Listen, at the end of the day, if you're a parent, if all you're doing is giving your kids money, what are you teaching them? How to ask for more money. And guess what? They're very good at it. I talk in my paper, so establish your dreams. These are not easy things to do, by the way. These are not easy things to do. Take a blank piece of paper. What are our dreams as parents? Woo, this is not easy. Achieve a fulfilling life and achieve financial independence. Might be two dreams you think about. Define your goals. Create your plans. Most people won't get a vision. Too big, right? They just give up. Oh, I can't establish a vision. Dreams, goals, plans. Give you a process. Too much debt. It's in the paper. Take a look at it. I'm going to keep some of the material out just for the purpose of time. And lastly, the generational transfer of wealth. Now, for those that don't have money, you can't close your ears. You can say, well, I don't make money, so the generational transfer of wealth is sort of irrelevant. No. The generational transfer of wealth of those with parents starts when you go to the candy store for the first time at age 3. You're beginning the generational transfer of wealth. Guess what? The kids will ask for as much as they can get. I made that mistake, been working all week, took the kids to the marina shop, if you will. It's cute, these little kids running around with their little bags, coming back. I figured it out, second, third visit, not the first one. I put a budget, 50 cents each. That's it. Don't come and see me. You spend your 50 cents, that's all you get. You are teaching them an important lesson. If you make it an open-ended exercise, candies today, cars tomorrow, houses, oh my gosh, it gets bigger, more expensive. Very important principle. Almost at any age, parents can afford to lend their kids more than their kids can afford to be given. Right? So it's 3-year-old, if you're giving them 10 bucks for candies, you better get a good dentist. So in taking control, make up your mind, render a decision. You know, there's a saying that when we have, this is core to my thinking, both on personal development, all the papers, philanthropy, family, etc. Every day we are given choices. Every day. When we're given a choice, it requires a decision. You can make the right, the wrong, but usually no decision is the worst decision. Let me give you a picture. You're driving along. It's a two-way street. You're going along. All of a sudden, you come to a stop sign. On the other side, all of a sudden, it's a one-way street coming at you. No decision is not a good decision here. You better go left or right. No decision is you're going to a one-way street coming at you. Limited shelf life, as we say. Especially if there's trucks coming off that one-way street. Big, big trucks. So to make the left or the right. When you make a decision, it requires a commitment. Okay, this is how I operate. Pretty black and white at times. So the decision requires knowledge and wisdom. The commitment requires planning, discipline, hard work, passion, patience, and must never forget love. Must never forget love. Love is the safety valve. When your passion and your hard work and your discipline become so focused, you lose sight of everything. The way I put it is passion provides the spark, discipline provides the fuel, and love provides the coolant for the journey. When you forget love, and I talk about this in one of my papers, you know, getting stuck in a city called success, it might not be, and it usually is not the success you planned. You know, you arrive home at the end of your life, your wife has become a roommate, your children have become boarders, and you've got no relationships anymore, and yet you've worked extraordinarily hard. It's because most likely you've forgotten love. So don't ever forget love. So in taking control, make the decision. It's your decision. As Ted said, I can do it myself. Everyone in this room, when I'm about to, at the end, give you two suggestions, can do it themselves. I'm sorry, I really do believe this. I think it's just a question of, for the most part, I think part of it is you haven't been exposed to it. So there's no judgment intended here. I mean, if you don't know, how could you be judged? You're not going to be judged for it. But once you've been exposed to it, then it becomes your responsibility. Then you have to ask, well, why am I not doing it? And then the other thing you have to do when you take control, as I said, is establish your vision. And I just wrote down some dreams. Achieve a fulfilling life, as I said before. Achieve financial independence. Those are the two dreams. Big picture stuff. Dreams require imagination. That's good imagination. Your goals. Manage your debt. Learn the basics of wealth management. You know, there's nothing wrong with debt, by the way. It's when it's managing you rather than you're managing it. The reality is most of us would like, say, to buy a house. And unless you sort of won a lottery ticket, have an inheritance or extraordinary career, you're going to have a mortgage. I mean, that's life. That's part of it. But that mortgage has to be paid off. I think this is the most tragic mistake we've made is in my parents' generation, they had what they call mortgage burning parties, when somebody actually paid off their mortgage, they got together on a Saturday night, not at some fancy restaurant, at somebody's house, and they actually burnt the mortgage. My generation, not quite as avid on that, but I believe are committed to paying the mortgage down. I hate to say it, the next generation is almost like it'll never get paid off. You know, when I read people are retiring with debt, I thought, oh man, do you guys know what you're doing? There's going to be a whole generation that's going to wake up. What you need to retire, that's another topic for another time. Read my Managing Your Wealth. But it's going to be a difficult time for a lot of people when they retire, and you've got to realize at the end of the day, the government's not going to be able to bail you out everywhere. The government's got their own challenges right now. Canadian government, far better shape. But when you look at the U.S. government, the sense of entitlement going on down there is just, I'm not sure how it's going to end. I don't mean to be a doom and gloomer, but you better take control of your own destiny. And then lastly, and here we go, create your plans. And the two plans I'm going to suggest are preparing a budget and start a savings plan. And we'll talk about those in a minute. So what I want to do now is talk about the generational transfer of wealth. Train a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not turn away from it. Proverbs 22, verse 6. And I'm going to share with you three stories. Stories are good. Stories you make mistakes, stories you learn from, personal experience. This is Bob's stories. My first story. When our sons, I'm getting better at this. You know, don't use oldest, use eldest, and it's our, not my. But this was my plan. So, my plan for our children. When the eldest turned around 6, I took him down to the local bank. It was the Royal Bank, actually. They had a special on, Leo the Lion. And if you opened a bank account for your kids, they gave you $5, right? Actually, things have done better. Bank of Montreal recently had a plan where if you did the same thing, I believe, they gave you $25. So go to BMO.com and poke around and see what you can find. Or just Google. You know, that's the thing, eh? With Google today, knowledge is available to everybody. Knowledge. So there's a great Japanese proverb, knowledge without wisdom is like a load of books on the back of an ass. Knowledge without wisdom is like a load of books on the back of an ass. Knowledge is available to everybody. When I was young and I had to do a project, I remember going down to the library and spending 4 hours on microfiche to get my knowledge. Now I Google it and 0.34 seconds is slow. So really the question becomes is, where's your wisdom coming from? I read the Book of Proverbs. That's my suggestion. Do a study on the Book of Proverbs. I did that for my kids. I think I got as much out of it as they did. So anyways, we went down to the bank account. We opened it one-on-one. And, you know, I've told this story, and somebody said to me, well, yeah, but we've already got bank accounts for the kids. We don't need to do this. No, you're missing the point. The point is, we're going to go down, and I said to them, when they opened the bank account, I turned to Michael and said, okay, we're going to come back every year around the same time in January, and whatever you have saved and want to put into that bank account of your money, we will give you a 25% bonus. Now, we did this for all three of them. And, of course, when you're 6 years old, I mean, who really cares? By the time they got to around 10 or 11, though, they began to figure out the game. In other words, babysitting, jobs. I mean, if I do that job and make that money, especially around Christmas, I'll get another 25% for it. This is good, right? This is what you want. What's the goal here? The goal is to teach them the basics of wealth management. If it's going to cost me 25% from whatever he saves, so be it. But you're teaching, the dream is to help them achieve financial independence. Keep going back up the line. So this is all consistent. Now, things got a little off track when all of a sudden the bank, at the same time my kids were becoming teenagers, introduced ATM machines and ATM cards. So all of a sudden money out was sort of going quickly against money in. And by the way, there was carryover penalties and everything else. Like if you took the money out, you know, you can't just go 2 days later and suck out the 25% and then put it back. You know, these kids are good. I mean, in actual fact, it's good because they're trying to figure out where's the loophole. And every time they figured out one, I closed it down. So what we did is we took the money from their bank account, put it into a mutual fund, and the game continued on. By the time they got to 16, they each saved close to $2,000. The $2,000, ladies and gentlemen, was somewhat irrelevant. It's what they learned on the journey. They learn the basics of how to save, how to budget, how to try to scam dad, and it didn't work. It's important. So that I would suggest that. As a matter of fact, for grandparents in the group, what a great thing for a six-year-old grandchild. Just the three of you, perhaps mom and, Nana, granddad, however you go by, and your grandchild. It's not about opening a bank account. Make it clear on that. You just don't go down, well, I've opened a bank account for young Johnny. No. Johnny's got to come down with you. You got to remember what I said? It takes little time and effort to leave your money. It takes a lot of time and effort and little money to leave your values. That's what you're doing here. You're teaching them a basic value in life called how to achieve financial independence, how to learn the basics of wealth management. Second story. Kids got a little older. I shared with Laurel, I think it'd be a good idea to sponsor a family at Christmas. So we went to our local church. We were not at CTF at the time. We just walked down the street, knocked on the door, said, do you have a program like this? Oh, yeah. 82 names later, we picked one. This story is so old. I remember I bought a Sony Walkman for the 11-year-old daughter. There were two kids. They were both unemployed. And you know what? I'm not even sure if it was a scam, but I really didn't care because it accomplished everything I wanted. And I sat down with the kids. I could have done a better job, I know. I sat down with the kids and said, okay, there's an 11, 8-year-old. What do you think they want, Michael? And Michael said, oh, Sony Walkman. Or Ted was at the time, maybe around 6. So he had his input, and Blair was 4, so he didn't have much input. Jack wasn't on the scene yet. And I asked Laurel, and what we did is we bought gifts for all four, mom, dad, the two kids. We bought a full Christmas dinner. And then they said, well, we can either have that delivered or you can deliver it yourself. And I said, no, you know what? I want to deliver it ourselves. So it was somewhere out in Scarborough. My father, myself, and the two older boys, Michael and Ted, got in the car, delivered, up to the 11th floor, down the hall. And it was really, really important. And my only regret on this is we only did it once. I wish we had done it a number of times because you know what? It's teaching, again, a very important value in life. That there are people out there who are not as fortunate as you are, and we all have a responsibility with what we've been given to help them. And the third one. There's no young kids here. Good. Okay. The third one. It's only a cell phone. Cell phones, I can read a family real quick on how they are dealing with the difference between entitlement and responsibility. While I was sitting there, I just worked out some numbers. I get my oil changed at the local garage, and we were talking to the guy who normally does it, and I said, well, how's it going? He said, oh, I can't believe it. My 11-year-old daughter came home and wants a BlackBerry. And I said, whoa. Like, that's $100 a month, right? So at $100 a month for an 11-year-old, if you finally get her off the books at around age 24, which might or might not happen, is around a $15,000 investment. $15,000. So the problem with cell phones is the industry has convinced us, subtly, yes, that if we don't buy our kids a cell phone, we don't love them. I mean, just, right? We don't care for them. We don't want to be responsible for them. Our kids are not quite so subtle. It's not a question of love. They're entitled to it. They are entitled to a cell phone. Let me share a story with you. We have a men's group out at the main campus, if you will, and we get together, and one of the guys was there. He's got four kids. I think the ages of the kids are somewhere between 21 and 16. He said his average monthly cell phone bill is between $500 and $700. $500 and $700. He said, Bob, this is out of control. It's out of control. What would you recommend I do? I said, well, I think what I would do, and again, everybody's got their own approach. I mean, obviously what's happened here is he has not brought any accountability into managing the cell phones. I mean, the kids, understandably, just off text messaging, long distance phone calls, no accountability. I said, the first thing you have to do is sit down with your wife and say, we and I take responsibility have made a mistake. So you have to get the wife and you on the same page. Then you have to sit down with the kids and explain, I owe you an apology. I made a horrendous mistake here. Take accountability. That doesn't cost that much. I mean, so they say you're an idiot. Well, that's life. I've had that happen lots of times. And say, the way we're going to fix this is 6 months from now. So give them some time. There's a new sheriff in town. There's going to be a new policy. Let me tell you a story. When my kids went to university, Michael was, his personality and cell phones really weren't common. not an issue. Got through that one. Usually what happens when the second one comes along, it's a massive torpedo hit, right? I thought it was so cute going down to the store. I think we went to Future Shop with Teddy and Blair, and they could buy cell phones that take pictures. I thought, this is neat. And, you know, being a parent, we can get in touch with them. Guess what? They have to answer the phone for you to get in touch with them, right? Right? It doesn't quite work the way you think it works. So all of a sudden, I walked out of there smiling and beaming. Was I an idiot? We had $75 to $100 each monthly plans in place. Well, of course, Teddy goes off to university and the plan starts to pick up. And so I'm sitting there, now, Ted, you're going to have to be responsible for some of your calls. He said, well, Dad, not when Mom phones me. I said, no, that's fair. When Mom phones you. And so I'm sitting there every month trying to go through. Well, let's see, that was Laurel's call to Ted, but Ted text message. And so I said, Ted, you owe me $41 over the last 3 months. And so I have to collect the money. Okay, there's a far more simple solution. Unfortunately, Blair got hammered, and Ted now is, and by the way, they pay for their own cell phones now. Except Blair. Blair's still in university. I said, we're going to get you a Visa card when you go to university, Blair. We're going to put it in my name with you as the second user. We'll make it quite clear to the bank there'll be a $500 limit, which is the minimum limit you can have, but it also became the maximum. I said, if your card is not in good standing, i.e. you were paying off the card regularly, then we'll just shut her down. I mean, I've told the bank, anything over $500, I will not pay. And I want you to understand that. I then said to Blair, now it's time to renew your cell phone. Do you want a cell phone? Oh, he said, yes, Dad, I want to upgrade to a BlackBerry. I said, good. Well, this is the new sheriff in town. New sheriff in town. We are going to pay $50 a month for when you're in school. He was in a co-op program. And when you're working, you pay the whole thing yourself. Oh, so that means you pay and I get... No, you're missing the point. The cell phone's going to go through the Visa card. You're responsible for it. We will give you $50 a month. I don't have to sit there and figure out when Laura phones him or not phones him. And you know what? There was a lot of protest. But I will tell you this, how parents approach cell phones speaks volumes. It's one of the most important issues, because if you just give your kid, and that's why I'm glad there's no kids here, if you just give your kid, kids can do open a bank account one. If you just give your kid a cell phone without any accountability, you're sowing in huge problems down the road. Now, the principles are this. Those three stories. The principles are this. They require establishing a dream. What is the dream? I was trying to teach my kids how to become responsible adults. It's a two-prong process. Three-prong, actually. First one is to establish good core values. The second one is to establish the basics of wealth management. And the third one is good relationship skills. I think if you do those three, there's a 90% chance you end up in a city called responsibility. That's where your kids end up. If you don't do those three, there's a 60% chance, not 90, but 60, that they end up in a city called entitlement. And that is an ugly place to go. Because you know what? Not only is it ugly for them, they will then sow it into the next generation. So you want to, as best you can, there are no guarantees in life, to help your kids end up in a city called responsibility so they can sow that into the next generation. It requires a goal. So define your goals, and it requires a process, and most importantly, when you get down to the process, it requires good communication. I made lots of mistakes, but one thing I've learned is I have to work more in my communication. So that's why Michael and Bree are signing this contract. It is a contract. It's not enforceable, it's not legal, not going to ever take them to court over it, but I want them to be accountable. I want both of them to be accountable. I want them to see in black and white what they've done. And so when the first interest payment comes up in 2 years, I can just send an email, by the way, according to the agreement, are you guys okay with this? It's up to them. And you know what will happen, I hope, is they will pay this all off, and then they'll be buying another house, and we can do the process again. Perhaps for more money. You know, too much is given, all that stuff. You do well with the little stuff, you'll do better with the bigger stuff. I think it's important on my part, creativity, adaptability, the ATM story. But But it has to be covered in love. That has to be the primary focus of it. And, you know, there's such things as tough love and soft love. And if all you're doing is soft love, in other words, just giving them a cell phone without any accountability, you're not really blessing them. You're actually just getting the guilt off your books and putting the problem on theirs. When you really think about it, why would anybody give a 12-year-old a full BlackBerry plan? I'm sorry if anybody's done that. I apologize, but we won't discuss it. But, you know, really stand back and think. I mean, if they've got it at age 12, what do they want at age 24? Right? A Mercedes would do just fine, thank you. And we'll put the cell phone in the Mercedes. And you know what? I'm gracious. I'll pay for the cell phone. You pay for the Mercedes, I'll pay for the cell phone. On my children's part, it required accountability, discipline, and desire. You know, you have to make these projects a little fun, too. You have to challenge them. Now, there's not much fun on the story about cell phones, but I think the Christmas sponsoring a family, getting them involved, going shopping with them to buy the actual presents, to see how you put together a Christmas dinner, to deliver it, these are all good things, but they require time and effort. It's not just a question of writing a check. You know, the money involved in this thing was like $200. I mean, I don't mean to dismiss $200, but it's not as if it was some massive amount of capital that was required. And quite frankly, you could have done it probably for half that price. It was the time and effort that made it work. So in terms of getting started, by wisdom a house is built, and through understanding it is established. Proverbs 24, verse 3. You got to get your house, your own house in order first before you can teach anybody. So the question is, do you really want to get your own house in order? And here are the two suggestions. So now we're going to get to the crux of the presentation. I know, this is called the accountability side. You have to prepare a budget. Less than 10% of people prepare a budget. So if you want to be in the minority, go prepare a budget. You don't have to make it massively complicated. In my paper, it's outlined. A friend of mine's going through a separation, possibly a divorce. They're in their late 50s. They've never prepared a budget in their life. All of a sudden, one of the parties asked me to step in and help, and that's the first thing I did. I said, we've got to figure out where the cash is first, where the cash is coming and where is it going. All of a sudden, they both have been major revelation. They are in deep trouble for their retirement. They have no savings. I would say, unfortunately, probably 60% of people just live day to day. Now, I don't mean this to judge everybody. I've been very fortunate. But I think you have to take some responsibility for living beyond day to day. So just preparing a budget is going to give you an idea, cash in and cash out. I like the way Blair has approached it. Here's a 21-year-old who's got a budget not only for 2012, 2013, 2014. He's got a pro forma balance sheet. I mean, this kid's miles ahead of where I was at that age, which is good. Isn't that what you want for as a parent? That your kids... You know, as somebody asked me with Ted, he's done some extraordinary things, and somebody asked me, are you prepared when Ted passes you by? And I said, no, I'm not. And the guy thought, ooh, I didn't expect that answer. I said, well, I should rephrase your question. He passed me by going up 2 years ago. I'm not prepared for him to pass me going down. My kids, you know what? True parenthood, you want everything you've got plus whatever they can do on their own. And you know what? If they do better than you, and how do you find better, right? So be it. So prepare a budget. Now, the key about preparing a budget, this is not an isolated sort of event just for, say, the husband to do. Let me share a personal story. A couple of years ago, in 2008, I sort of looked at the world, which is getting a little crackly around the edges. And I thought, you know, we had three kids at university, and rightly or wrongly, we pay for a lot of their tuition fees. I said to myself, you know what, it's time to prepare a budget. You know, you keep saying prepare a budget. Well, I prepare a budget in different ways, but actually an Excel spreadsheet preparing a budget, the old-fashioned way. And you can do it the old-fashioned way, get some graph paper. But any way you want to do it, prepare a budget. Well, I prepared a budget, and I thought, you know what, why am I going through all this stress? I think my children should be involved partially in it too. And so what I sent them an email, and again, give ample warning. It was in September. I said, come the January payment for your university education, there'll be a modest, I mean, it's like $500 reduction. And so I sent that out. And then I looked at, you know, every month we put some money, or I put some money into our joint banking account, which Laurel uses to manage the house expenses, some of them. And so I thought, well, we can even clip a little money there. So I took a little money off the top, and the automatic deposit went down. Made the crucial mistake of not explaining this to my wife before it happened. And as she walked into the bank, and Laurel's not that good at looking at bank statements on the expense side, but the revenue side, she looks at pretty closely. And she said, Bob, why has it gone down by $1,000 a month? I said, oh, well, that's because I had done a budget. Big important lesson here. You're going to do a budget, you got to sit down and talk to all the parties once you make the proposal, because if you don't have everybody buying into it, it's sort of useless. So you've got to have everybody on the same page. They might not like it, but it's better that they know what you're doing, why you're doing it, and then asking them, well, what would you do differently? Here's the numbers. This is the revenue line. This is the expense line. Expenses are a little higher than revenue. This can't go on forever. You've got to sort of look at this. So I know preparing a budget is like going to the gym. It's like dental floss. It's all these other things. Bit of a pain, but you know what? It will avoid problems down the road if you do it. So I encourage you to establish a budget. Make it simple. It doesn't have to be massively complicated. And if you don't know how to use Excel, that's what the next generation's for. There's your first project to transfer a little wealth. You know, say for $10, I want you to help us prepare a budget. And don't get all hung up that they see the numbers. They're part of the family. They should know what's going on. We don't have to necessarily get into the inheritance discussion right now. But the operating expenses, I think this is the biggest mistake people make. They all of a sudden graduate from high school, they go to university, they're in this perfect world where everybody's paying for everything, and then slam, they have no idea. Well, I'm sorry, I got to blame the parents on that one. So bring them into the process ahead of time. That's the first one, prepare a budget. The second one is start a savings plan. Now, I think the problem with starting a savings plan is everybody says, well, look, we don't have any money, so how can we save? Well, you know that story in the Bible, the woman with the two copper coins. What I say to people, she learned to save those from somewhere. They just didn't arrive magically in her pocket. So she had saved those two copper pennies. Granted, it wasn't a lot, but as Jesus said, it was all she had. Same thing. And you are very fortunate to live in a country like Canada. I mean this sincerely. I will show my political party here. Stephen Harper did a good job, finance minister did a wonderful job. Between the two of them, they developed something called the tax-free savings account. And people knock it because it's only $5,000 a year, at least people in my, you know, my private clients. But I said, you're missing the point. The point is, it is a wonderful opportunity to learn how to save. It is so simple. There's no paper to fill it other than opening the account. There's no taxes to pay. You don't have to figure out where it goes in your tax form, which usually we get the wrong place. You know, you don't have to keep track of your adjusted cost base when you redeem it. You can take the money out tax-free. It earns tax-free. Now, the key thing is, don't get hung up, well, I don't have $5,000, so I can't do it. No. You go to the local bank and give them a nightmare. You open a small account. I mean, they all want the big accounts, of course. But let me give you an example. This is how simple it is. My niece loves her cafe latte. And Jack and I did some research one day. We went out to Yorkdale. All right, so there Jack and I are going up in the elevator, he in his wheelchair. I said, Jack, I need your help here. And so we went up and we went to Starbucks, and a cafe latte grande, I think, the biggest of the bigs. Is $4.70. So let's take a little poetic license and round it up to $5. So she has two a day. Two a day. That's $10. I'm not sure she does it on weekends, but I said to her, look, why don't you give up one of those cafe lattes a day? That's $5 a day and save it. Just put it in a little piggy bank somewhere. And at the end of 3 months, you'll have saved $325. Trust me on the numbers. And you go down to the local bank or your credit union or whoever you want and say, I'd like to open a tax-free savings account. Oh, step right in. Where's your $5,000 check? Oh, don't have that. $325. And you put it in something conservative. You don't have to go crazy with it. You know, balanced account is good if you're I mean, you've got to talk to a professional on this, and this is not, you can't, not one size doesn't fit all. But every 3 months, you go down to the bank with your $325 cafe latte money, right? So that's like, what, $1,300 a year. If you do that for 20 years and earn 4%, you'll have $40,000. $40,000 for giving up one cafe latte a day. So let me just finish with this. I think that, yeah, I missed the last slide with the cafe latte. The cafe latte story to me is the mustard seed. If you have faith as small as a mustard seed, nothing will be impossible. So start with something small. That's the whole premise of this presentation today. Keep it simple. Keep it achievable. Keep it be a sense of accomplishment. And really the question will be, 4 weeks from now, if you haven't opened a tax-free savings account, if you haven't done a budget, ask yourself why. You know, discipline, arch enemy is procrastination. The neat thing is I gave this talk about our cottage. They asked me to do it, and two of my nieces and one of my nephews have all opened tax-free savings accounts where they never would have done it. And it's small amounts. It's not, they're not writing checks for $5,000. But they're starting, and, you know, that's how you reinforce it. You know, you just keep grinding along, you know. And when you get a little extra money, maybe you say, well, you know what, maybe I should just have 3 cafe lattes a week. And maybe I can use that extra money because, you know, this thing's growing. And there's a sense of accomplishment. And that's the key thing. And then use your wealth as parents and grandparents to sow these principles into the next generation. It's really not a great accomplishment just if you do it yourself. The greatest accomplishment, remember I said earlier, I define significance. I said I define success as discover your passion, commit to be the best you can be at it, and share it with others. I define significance as help others discover their passion, provide the resources so they can become the best they can be at it, and encourage them to share it with others. Significance is actually a step down from success, not a step up. When we're successful at something, the material rewards and the recognition go directly to us, for the most part. When we're significant in someone else's life, the material rewards go to that person, and the recognition goes to that person. So I would just encourage you to take this, and not only for yourselves, but for those in your family. So thank you.